What is political blackmail, and what are some of the things that have been going on after the Nashville school shooting? Welcome back to another T-Rex Talk. This is Isaac Botkin, and we're going to go over a number of different things in this episode. Obviously, we will be talking about the school shooting that happened in Nashville last week, but the timing around that is kind of interesting. The aftermath has been very interesting, and today is April Fool's Day, which is also kind of interesting because today was the scheduled day of Trans Vengeance, which is actually canceled, but we'll be talking more about that as well. So, as many of you know and have probably heard quite a bit about, there was a school shooting last week at Covenant Presbyterian Church. But the timing is a little bit interesting. I'm not suggesting anything conspiratorial, but let's just look at a few different events. Earlier this month, or I guess earlier in March, Tennessee passed SB1, which was a very interesting bill that banned trans surgeries, the mutilation of children under a certain age. I don't know that Tennessee is the first state to pass this type of bill, but it is the first state to pass a bill that is very expressly focused on identity. The official wording is that it's outlawing the administering to a minor a medical procedure for the purpose of enabling a minor to identify with or live as a purported identity inconsistent with the minor's sex, which is an extremely extreme bill in the eyes of the left. So immediately after Tennessee passed that bill, there was a furor in the media. People were calling out Tennessee. They were pretty hot under the collar. That was a few weeks ago, and the stories about Tennessee's bigotry continued. And then just over a week ago, Tucker Carlson did a segment talking about some of the backlash. There was a very strong focus, people telling the trans community to arm up, to not only go out and fight for their rights, but also to prepare for attacks from far right wingers and genocide and things like that. I'm going to have some direct quotes just so you know I'm not exaggerating. But there was immediately tremendous mockery of Tucker Carlson for this daft alarmism. How could he possibly suggest that all of the trans community that was buying firearms would in fact plan on using them when all they were doing was saying that they were planning on using them? Now, technically, I don't know how many of those were actually trans folks and how many of them were just media allies. But last week, there was a shooting at Covenant Presbyterian Church. And it was actually a member of the trans community who did the murdering. 28-year-old woman went into the church building, which has a school attached, and attacked and killed three children, all aged 9, and 3 adults. Response time for the police officers was 14 minutes, which is actually very, very short, but waiting 14 minutes is very, very long. I also want to point out that police response, once they were on scene, was excellent, moving very quickly, neutralizing the threat very quickly. But obviously the impact on that church community and the school and those families has been tremendous. And the aftermath of the Nashville shooting, pretty rough in a number of different ways. I'm not going to talk a lot more about the shooter. This is pretty close to home, but there's a lot of stuff that's been going on immediately afterwards. And I mean, same day, day after, lots of people calling Tennessee congressmen and senators, leaving death threats on their phones. Ironically, people saying, "We hate violence so much that we will kill you if you don't pass anti-gun bills, if you don't start confiscating people's firearms." Now, interestingly, most of these phone calls were obviously scripted, and for the first, almost the entire day, all of them had New York area codes, which is a little bit fishy. I'm not sure if that's because these were all actually New Yorkers, or if that's just what the phone bank was set to before they remembered that they should switch it over to Tennessee, Nashville area codes. And there were some very loud protests. People physically showed up. There was a lot of shouting. There was a lot of pushing. It looked a little bit like something that had happened on January 6th, but obviously on a much smaller scale because Tennessee's Capitol building is a lot smaller. And most of the protesters that showed up tried very hard to keep the conversation, if you can call it that, the chants and the shouting and the conversation very much on guns. A lot of the initial reaction was on guns and the murders because details surrounding the murderer were not particularly politically convenient at that time. When leftists show up at your Capitol building to demand gun action, it's a little bit inconvenient to say that a leftist shot a bunch of people at a Christian school, and that's why Christians should disarm the rest of the Christians. Yeah, all the usual folks were there, the community organizers and logisticians and social media folks, Eva, Mark, Shanti, the usual suspects, and a lot of new faces. A lot of people were being bussed in. Even high school students were being bussed in from other states. Not sure of all of them, but definitely Alabama and definitely Kentucky. And just a lot of shouting and a lot of chanting and a lot of political blackmail. Some of the chants were the usual, think of our kids, save our kids, but there was also a lot of very aggressive, no action, no peace stuff. And this is really interesting to see. As we've gotten more involved in local politics and done more and more stuff at the State House, we've gotten to know a lot of different people. And we've seen rallies, we've organized lobby days, and we've seen things like this also back in the summer of 2020. A lot of folks got bussed in to protest various things during that mostly peaceful summer. And that is more like what we were seeing over the last few days. This isn't voters showing up to remind their representatives which values they hold. This isn't people showing up with recommendations or with concerns. This is people making death threats. Admittedly, most of those over the phone. These are people chanting that there will be a lack of peace if they don't get their way. This is like good old-fashioned mob stuff. And to be honest, I'm not really sure how the Tennessee legislature is going to handle it. I think that one of the major, major factors that may change the way that it is looked at is the fact that so many of the folks who are showing up in these demonstrations are high school students. I'm not sure if that makes it feel less like a mob and more like a collection of young future voters, or if people believe that these are the people who are the most probably impacted by gun legislation or a lack of gun confiscation. But I think that that is the thing that may change the tide. If the Tennessee legislature caves and bows to the mob and compromises and passes some anti-gun legislation, even if it's a small compromise, I think it's going to be the high school students that tip things over the edge. Which is kind of a shame because I honestly have no idea how many of the high school students actually want to be there, because the school teachers can organize walkouts and call classes and bus people to the Capitol building. And then once they're there, they're really not allowed to leave the group. There are a lot of examples of organizations like March for Our Lives, organizing memorials or vigils that turn into, once you get off the bus, a large anti-gun rally. And so people are really easily tricked into participating in these things. Or if you're a high school student and you're given the option, go to the Capitol building and yell at a bunch of boring old politicians or math class. I mean, it's pretty obvious, right? But a lot of those students are genuinely fearful of school shootings, and they believe the things that they're being told. I don't want to undermine that at all, and in fact, we'll come back to that later. But you can tell the difference between a professional activist and a high school student pretty easily. All the shouting and screaming was political blackmail. It wasn't an ideological case. It wasn't a principled case. It was an entirely emotional case. We are very emotional about things, and we're going to make you emotional about things too. There'll be death threats. There'll be blood on hands. There'll be all of these things so that you, the legislators, have an emotional response to these things the same way that we do. Our emotions are bigger and louder, and they demand a response, and that response needs to be this legislation now. And I think a really important principle that most of us know, but is maybe hard to remember in times like this if you are a sitting legislator of Tennessee, is that you never bow to the mob. You never actually pay blackmail. The temptation is always there to say, pay a ransom. And in real life, That kind of sort of works sometimes, maybe in the short term. You pay the ransom, you get your family member back, but you're also subsidizing the kidnap and ransom industry. Political ransom, political blackmail, political protection money, it never actually works. You never, ever pay that. Or the Dane Geld. There's a great Rudyard Kipling poem about the Dane Geld. Back when the Danes were invading England, they would go a Viking and they would attack England, and you could pay them to go away, but very temporarily. And he wrote a really great poem, which I was going to read part of it, but I'm just going to read the whole thing. It is always a temptation to an armed and agile nation to call upon a neighbor and to say, "We invaded you last night. We are quite prepared to fight unless you pay us cash to go away." And that is called asking for Dane Geld. And the people who ask it explain that you've only to pay him the Dane Geld, and then you'll get rid of the Dane. It is always a temptation for a rich and lazy nation to puff and look important and to say, "Though we know we should defeat you, we have not the time to meet you. We will therefore pay you cash to go away." And that is called paying the Dane Geld, but we've proved it again and again, that once you have paid him the Dane Geld, you will never get rid of the Dane. It is wrong to put temptation in the path of any nation, for fear they should succumb and go astray. So when you are requested to pay up or be molested, you'll find it better policy to say, "We never pay anyone Dane Geld, no matter how trifling the cost. For the end of that game is oppression and shame, and the nation that pays it is lost." That principle was true in the days of the Vikings. It was true in Kipling's day when Britain was trying to appease the Nazis. And it's true today. You don't negotiate with terrorists, you never bow to the mob, and you never, ever pay the Dane Geld. And it's very important that mobs learn that tantrums don't work. If you teach mobs that tantrums do work, then all you're going to have is mobs and tantrums for the rest of your life. And especially this group of people, because it's largely our kids, our Tennessee high school kids, that are being told that tantrums work. I think it is incumbent upon our Tennessee legislators to make sure that our Tennessee kids learn that that is not actually true. Another really interesting thing that always happens after these events is that teachers' unions and various other lobbying groups stand up and they talk very loudly about our kids, the teachers are claiming your kids as their kids. They're even claiming the kids of this private Christian school as their kids, talking about our kids were killed last week. It was not members of the public school. It was not subjects of the Tennessee Teachers Union. It was children in a private school. And, you know, just last week, the week before, there was a lot of furor and fuss over a bill, HB 1214, that creates a bunch of new categories of public school so that they can pretend that they have school choice. They were not calling private schools our schools back then. Those were schools that needed more supervision, needed to be brought back into the fold under the supervision of the public schools. They were outsiders then. But then last week, those kids became our kids. Our kids were killed, said representatives of various teachers' unions. And I want you to think about this fact. If you live in Tennessee or Alabama or Kentucky, your kids are being used in this fight. Teachers are using your tax money to bus your kids to Nashville to demand that your reps pass laws that confiscate your guns. I want you to think about that fact. When the teachers' unions say those are their kids, those are your kids. You should be pulling your kids out of their schools as quickly as you can. Those are probably the biggest takeaways for me as we're watching some of this unfold. Number one, you never give in to the mob, and our legislators need to be encouraged to never give in to the mob. That's true everywhere, even though the mob seems to be the hottest breathing down the necks of Tennessee legislators right now. If you live in Tennessee, I would recommend that you write a letter to your Republican representatives. I don't know that it's actually worth getting in touch with the Democratic reps, but write to your Republican reps and senators and let them know that you still want strong Second Amendment protections and that you don't want them to bow before the mob. You don't want them to give in to this tantrum. You don't want them to give in to these demands. You don't want them to pay the blackmailers. Maybe you don't need to put in language quite that strong. And then the second thing that you need to do is get your kids out of those schools and engage in some proper school choice. I think a lot of schools and teachers' unions and various administrators around the country are kind of on edge at the moment because there has been a very large, very successful, very sweeping school choice movement ever since 2020. They're very much on edge. They're very much trying to keep what is theirs. They're very much trying to maintain their relevance. And so in some ways, I feel like this issue is as much a school issue as it is a gun issue. This is them flexing their muscles and trotting out your kids as janissaries in this particular gun debate. And I will point out that it's very rapidly becoming more than just a Second Amendment gun rights red flag law debate. People are bringing the trans stuff back into it now. They did tastefully wait a few hours. A few people waited days. But even just a couple of days after the shooting, there were many people chanting in the Tennessee Capitol building about trans rights and saying that there were seven victims. There were many people holding up seven fingers because they are arguing that there were seven victims in that school shooting, not just six, which I actually partially, there were not seven murder victims. There were six murder victims that were killed by one murderer. The murderer was not a victim in the school shooting at all. But I think that she was a victim in other ways that I'll get to in a minute. I mentioned the different elements in and around the trans community had been pretty vociferous in their complaints about Tennessee's laws. And they've actually been pretty spicy commenting on this particular school shooting. So the Trans Resistance Network is one of the most extreme groups. And they said that the murderer that I've just referred to had no other effective way to be seen than to, you know, murder children. And that life for transgender people is very difficult and made more difficult in the preceding months by a virtual avalanche of anti-trans legislation and public call-outs by right-wing personalities and political figures for nothing less than the genocidal eradication of trans people from society. Which is a pretty extreme claim, but I want you to remember that, because the word genocide comes up quite a bit. And I don't have the exact timing of this, but today, April 1st, April Fool's Day, was supposed to be the Trans Day of Vengeance. Technically, it was supposed to start yesterday with a whole bunch of school and college walkouts, which teachers helpfully organized. The event organizers were supposed to wear a mask and, quote, fight back against the far-right attacks. They were supposed to be doing stuff in Washington, D.C. They were supposed to be doing stuff outside of the Supreme Court building. I mean, hopefully outside, not inside, like the Tennessee Statehouse. Antifa was heavily involved in passing out the brochures and things like that. Technically, however, the official Trans Day of Vengeance was canceled. Apparently not because nobody was going to show up or because they realized that it was in rather poor taste, given that they were really attaching a huge amount of their rhetoric to a trans activist who murdered a bunch of people. And not because, you know, April 1st, April Fool's Day is kind of a weird time to do this. Apparently it was shut down because they received a credible threat that a lot of far right groups had planned violence against them. I think the whole thing kind of bears watching. But one of the things that is the other takeaway here is, why is it that it appears that a whole bunch of different groups are operating like really well together? So trans activists and allies and teachers unions and Antifa, a whole bunch of folks from the anti-gun crowd that have nothing in common with folks in any other respect, all team up really quickly and at the drop of a hat turn into a pretty large mob. And I don't think that this speaks to or proves the existence of a vast left-wing conspiracy. I think this just really shows that these groups do have something very clearly in common, which is to destroy some elements of the existing system, to destroy the guardrails, to destroy the limitations, to destroy the status quo. There's a whole bunch of things that they do have in common. And so once they see an opportunity, once they see the mob coalescing, once there is a common talking point, they do get together, and this kind of destructive nature doesn't really require a lot of coordination. If you're trying to create division and distraction and chaos because you want to destroy, then this kind of inconsistency between these different groups is actually a feature, not a bug. It makes your tantrums more effective if there isn't a consistent thing that you can argue with. And that's part of the reason that there appears to be, oftentimes, a lot less unity on the right. There's an expectation, maybe, that whenever there's an issue that is somewhat related to freedom, every freedom-related person should come out of the woodwork and just immediately turn into a very orderly and consistent and organized mob on the other side. And it just takes a huge amount more work. If you're trying to build or you're trying to restore, you just need a lot more coordination and a lot more principle in order to do that with any kind of consistency. You can't really expect this kind of constructive effort to just happen all by itself, like a George Soros-funded flash mob of useful idiots. There's a lot more foundational work to do. The destructive mob doesn't need that much structure. And, well, they have the added advantage of being able to use your kids. They're free, or at least as free as anything that's taxpayer-funded ever is. And a lot of these organizers and agitators can throw your kids into the fray really quickly and easily as cannon fodder. It doesn't really require them to put any skin in the game. I'll give you a couple of examples of this. One of them is Madonna. A couple of days after the school shooting, Madonna came out and announced a Nashville concert that will be a trans benefit concert. You'll notice that she didn't announce a Presbyterian benefit concert. And actually, now that I say that, I and probably the entire PCA is very grateful that she didn't do that. And I bet Madonna gets way more out of this particular concert than the trans community. She gets to virtue signal and kind of use this community the way that she's used other quote-unquote marginalized communities in the past. If you've looked at her different causes and ways that she has marketed herself, you can see that she's always pushed the envelope just outside of what is currently mainstream. Whatever is the currently edgy, cool mainstream thing, that's where she is. She didn't push for trans rights back in the early days. She didn't even push for homosexual rights back in her early days. She pushed for more fornication than was completely acceptable, but was still attractive. And then she moved on to the other things as they went. And she used those different communities far more than I'll bet they benefited from her. And there are an awful lot of different agitators and organizers and rabble-rousers that do exactly the same thing. In Madonna's case, I think that she just wants the fame and the fortune. But there's other people who want political power, and they are very quick and easy with the cannon fodder and the foot soldiers that are following them into this battle, only to be collateral damage. I want to go back to this idea that the murderer, the shooter of this particular school, this 28-year-old woman, was actually a victim. Because in many ways, I believe that she was. I think that when we look back in the future on this particular trans movement, we're going to look at it the way that we now think about the age of phrenology and lobotomies. This weird pseudoscience that had an incredibly devastating effect on a whole bunch of different families because a bunch of basically circus performers wanted to get fame and fortune by performing lobotomies in public and telling everybody that this is the way forward. This is the future of medical science. This is how we fix people and make them happier. And they had absolutely no consideration for their patients or subjects or exhibits or the families of the people that they were manipulating. Or maybe we'll think about it like the eugenics movement, which was far less flashy, but it was deeply destructive, and all of the purveyors of that particular ideology were very power-hungry, and they had no consideration for the people that they erased or sterilized because they were mere stepping stones, grist for the mill in their pursuit of dominance. And when I look at the trans community, I see a lot of people who are being treated in that way. When I think of the trans people that I knew 15, 20 years ago, before it was cool, before it was celebrated by the media, before they were Madonna's special friends, They weren't a collective group, a marginalized group, a political bloc. They were individuals who had struggles, difficulties. They had confusion about certain things. They desperately needed people to help them to work certain things out. But I want you to think about the fact that now there's an entire class of agitators and influencers and people who stand to gain from the growth of a marginalized trans community. They get to virtue signal and raise their social credit score by pitching a glorious trans lifestyle to confused young people. They can tell them that the way that they find satisfaction and fulfillment and a purpose and an identity is by doing the exact opposite of what their body is telling them to do. And then when that person joins that community and begins to undergo that kind of change, they find themselves fighting against their very own biology. They find themselves fighting against God's reality and what they were actually created to be, which is incredibly exhausting. And it doesn't actually give them the fulfillment and the perfection that they were sold. It doesn't solve all of their problems. And depending on when they started and what they did, it is completely and utterly irreversible. And then they get told that the only reason that they aren't happy and fulfilled and perfect and satisfied with their identity is because of people on the other side who are attacking them and trying to genocide them. The ideology hasn't failed. The chemicals haven't failed. The really barbaric surgeries haven't failed. The only failure to fully realize yourself in this new identity is other people who want to eradicate you from existence. This is the world that a number of people live in because they are following the advice and the influence of people who are the ideological grandchildren of the phrenologists and the eugenicists. It is heartbreaking and it is tragic. And it's the reason why it was really, really good for us to pass that SB1 bill earlier this year to stop the mutilation and chemical alteration of children. That's why the influencers and the agitators are so annoyed by bills like SB1. And that's why they're so quick to try to keep the trans community away from Christians, who will actually not genocide them, but love them by sharing with them the gospel and explaining to them how they can actually find peace and fulfillment, how they can actually find something that is the opposite of confusion and chaos, something that will take their army of cannon fodder and reduce it. Not too many people are talking about this, but that is the real reason that the trans community is at war with Christianity, because Christianity is the only thing that can solve the difficulties, the pain, and the questions that human beings have. So, homework assignment, tell your legislators not to bow to the mob, not to give in to the demands, not to pay the production money, and to get your kids out of the public school system. And pray for your enemies, and especially pray for the people who are being manipulated and harmed by your enemies for their own benefit. And remember, it is Christ or chaos, even though the other side is saying the opposite. It's not too surprising. It's April Fool's Day. Everything's kind of opposites these days. The Christian community that actually loves their enemies and has the answer that trans people are looking for are the ones who want to genocide them. The people who want to equip teachers and families so that they can protect their children are the ones who are being accused of endangering them. Banning body armor, now that's the way that you protect people from bullets. Wanting a much smaller and less powerful government is fascism. Judging people on anything other than the color of their skin is racism. And putting your blind faith in things that haven't been tested yet is science.